Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to our COVID-19 update for January 26th. Hope all are well. Joined by Dr. Gail Burstein and, of course, Kendra Schmidt from Deaf Access Services, who will be providing the American Sign Language. We have a lot of data to go through, so let's start. As of January 24th, there are 54,305 COVID-19 confirmed cases in Erie County since the beginning of the outbreak. So a little over almost 5.5% of our population has confirmed COVID-19 cases since March. We have a 7-day positivity rate of 5.2% as of the January 24th. And on January 24th, there were 409 COVID-19 patients in Western New York hospitals. 95 of them were in the ICU. 314 patients in Erie County hospitals, 80 in the ICU, 57 on an airway assist. 5, unfortunately, had died on January 24th. And 38% of the patients were age 64 and under that had COVID-19 in Erie County hospitals. We'll talk a little bit more about some of those statistics. Diagnostic testing, the new case totals are trending down, 21% decrease last week from the previous week. We had 2,984 confirmed cases for the week ending January 23rd as compared to 3,777 the week before and 4,399 for the prior week. Our 7-day positivity rate was 5.1%, so that's good. We're seeing a nice little drop, and our R value is below 1, which means for every individual that is catching COVID, they are transferring it to 0.9 individuals. We want to keep on seeing that number go below 1. When you start getting below 1 in the R value, it means that the virus is not being spread across the general population. And it is being out of control, so to speak. You're starting to control the virus. So that's a good sign. Our numbers based on zip codes for the week ending January 23rd, you'll see that the leading communities are some of those that have been leading all along on zip codes, 14221, 14150 in Hamburg, 14075 Hamburg, 14150 for Tonawanda, 14224 West Seneca. But I will note that we have seen a drop in the percentage of the population on a 7-day rolling average, as well as the total percentage of those that have been tested positive. So we are seeing those drop now into the 4s and 5s and 6s, where not that long ago they were in the 10s and the 12s. So that is a good sign. We still have some communities like my hometown of Lackawanna, which is a little higher than it should be, with an 8.4% testing positive last week, though we are seeing at least drops across the board in the urban, suburban, and rural areas. That's a good sign. Let's continue it. Keep it going. Erie County hospitalizations for the two-week period of January 11th through January 24th. 65.7% of Erie County hospital beds are occupied. 25% of COVID hospitalizations are an ICU bed. We have seen a pretty steep drop lately in overall hospitalizations, but we have not seen a change with regards to the ICU numbers, and actually they've gone up. And the same thing with those that are on an airway assist. They've gone up recently, even though we've seen a drop in overall numbers. So a greater percentage of our COVID patients are requiring intensive care. And that is concerning because these are people who are very sick. In a positive, the date of January 24th actually had the lowest Erie County COVID patient count since November 26th. So that's a good sign that our overall patient population is going down, but the percentage of those that are sick, are growing. 25% of all COVID hospitalizations are in the ICU. Mortality data, unfortunately, we have to note that 1,455 people have died from COVID-19 since the beginning of the pandemic in March, and 181 of them were in January of this year. Now, I wanted to look at a comparison from the first portion of the pandemic to where we are today. So I did a comparison of mortality data for the first 6 months, basically March to September 22nd, And then the last 4 months, the end of September, September 23rd to where we are today on January 21st is really the data date. Because while everyone knows what happened in the first portion of the pandemic, we were hunkered down and a lot of things were shut down. More things have opened, so what is the result of that? 52.4% of all deaths from COVID have occurred from September 23rd onwards. So during the four-month period of September 23rd to January 21st, 52.4% of all deaths have occurred. 762 people have died during that period. In the 6 months before, 47.6% of the people have died in Erie County from COVID, or 693. So even though it's a shorter period and we have better techniques of being able to handle COVID, more people have died from COVID in the last 4 months. I also understand during the first 6 months, a good portion of our community was completely shut down. So there was less chance for COVID to be spread. But this goes to show, even with the better methods that the hospitals have to treat individuals of COVID, more people have died in 4 months than the first 6 months. And then when you look at it, it's across the board like that. With age, more people under the age of 70 have died since September 23rd than during the first 6 months of the pandemic. And it's really noticeable in the 70 plus category, and many of these individuals in the 70 plus category live in their own settings, not in a congregate care setting like a nursing home. So they may live at their house, they may live in an apartment. But what you're seeing is 623 people have died, 70 and above, in the last 4 months than the 557 that died in the first 6 months. And the same goes, though it's almost identical, but it's still a little higher for those under the age of 70. So what we're seeing is across the board that these last 4 months when it comes to mortality have been worse than the first 6 months that really shook the world, so to speak. You really notice some of the changes when you look at the racial demographics. 87% of all people who've died in the last 4 months are white. 86.9% is the total amount. Only 9% of African Americans are of the percentage that have died in this last 4 months, where beforehand it was a much higher percentage. It was actually over 16%. And you see it across the board when we look at racial demographics in communities, that it is white individuals that have really been struck hard by COVID-19 with regards to cases, hospitalizations, and deaths in the last 4 months. And I do believe that it has a lot to do also with the disproportionate amount of individuals who were impacted by COVID during the first portion of the pandemic. African Americans were much more impacted in the first portion of the pandemic and truthfully took greater measures, I think, than others did in some of our suburban and rural communities. You also see it when you're talking about residences. The city of Buffalo makes up 27.9% of the population. During the first part of the pandemic, it made up 24.4% of the fatalities. 24.4% of those who died were from the city of Buffalo, 75.6% were from the surrounding areas. That has grown for the suburbs and the small cities. It's now 78.2% of all fatalities are coming from the small cities of Lackawanna and Tonawanda and the towns. And those areas outside the city of Buffalo make up 72% of our population. So there's a disproportionate amount of individuals who are dying outside of the city of Buffalo. And lately, it's a disproportionate amount of whites who are dying. That's why we've been saying to all these folks in many of these communities where the rates have been very high, you have to take this seriously. COVID does not discriminate based on where you live, the color of your skin, your bank account. You know, it will take lives indiscriminately. Now, to give you a little perspective, 1 year ago on yesterday, the Erie County Department of Health put out its first press release with regards to the coronavirus. And it just goes to show where we have come in 1 year. And of course, we didn't get our first coronavirus case until March of 2020. But our Department of Health was starting to put in place back then the pieces of the puzzle, so to speak, to address the coronavirus. Little did we know what we'd be dealing with 1 year later, but a lot has happened in this last year. And as we've noted, 1,455 of our fellow residents have died from the coronavirus. And we need to do all we can to ensure that that number is kept as low as possible until we can vaccinate all individuals. A couple things we'll talk about before I turn over to Dr. Burstein. Back to business. Our back to business program is still in place. We've seen some really interesting statistics lately with regards to business in Western New York and Erie County. In the Buffalo Niagara metro region, we've actually seen a growth in jobs in the manufacturing sector and the professional sectors. Of course, we've seen tremendous hit in the hospitality area, hotels, restaurants, and the like. So there are actually portions of our community where the jobs are growing. There's more jobs today in manufacturing than there was a year ago. And we're working with all to try to help all. And that's why we still have our back to business task force in place, working to address the needs of the greater community. The Erie County Industrial Development Agency has the COVID Impact Loan Program, where you can get up to a very low interest, no more than 1% interest rate for up to a $250,000 loan. You have no payments for up to 1 year and interest-only payments for year two. This is a very, very unique program. We want all to understand that as long as you're a small business with less than 50 people based in Erie County, you can qualify for this. So call the Erie County Industrial Development Agency at 716-858-6525 and dial extension 219 for more information on the COVID Impact Loan Program. Of course, the Shop 716E gift card is still out there. There are still some people buying gift cards, as well as you should, because if you got a gift present you want to give somebody, you can give them a Shop 716E gift card. We've already seen more than 30,000 gift cards purchased with a total value of $1.1 million. If you got a gift card, go use it. There's over, I think, 740 participating businesses in Erie County. Go use it. Go spend some money. Help a local business out. Now, as a lot of people know, last week the governor announced on Friday that high-risk sports could return if they received approval and measures were put in place by the local health departments. Yesterday, we announced our guidance with regards to higher-risk sports, which also includes like hockey and basketball, lacrosse. Not all sports, we're only the ones we've identified. But higher risk non-professional non-collegiate sports can proceed with training and games under certain conditions. First off, the team is responsible for screening all athletes. And I want to note that this is not just for high school sports, it's also for youth activities as well. So sports leagues, youth leagues, adult leagues, same rules apply. So I know there's different types of adult hockey leagues out there. You have to apply these rules to be able to pick up and start playing games again. And the most important one we want to identify is that if anybody on the team, a coach or a player, is exposed to COVID-19 or is diagnosed with COVID-19, and basically the whole team has to pause for 10 days. So all activities, all in-group activities, whether it's meetings, practices, or games, have to pause. And any individual who was a direct close contact with an individual would be required to quarantine as determined by contact tracing. So we want people to understand the governor allowed our communities based on certain metrics to allow these higher risk sports. Our numbers have gone down. We are looking at other metrics that the governor's asked us to take a look at, including whether the variant is in your region. As of right now, we don't have an answer to that question, but we hope to have it by the middle of this week. But regardless, we are going to allow higher risk sports to start playing game competitions on February 1st, but there are rules that have to be followed. And with that, I'm going to turn over to Dr. Burstein and talk a little bit more about those.
Thank you. And so, the local health departments are working to making sure that that youth and adults are able to play state sports, albeit safely, and not get exposed to COVID-19 and really minimize the risk of COVID-19. So some rules that we have put in place is that all athletes and spectators and coaches and everybody who is involved with sports are required to wear some type of appropriate facial covering, a cloth mask, when they're not playing or practicing. So we know that with these high intensities, high exertional sports, while people are playing in the field or if they're on the field, being referees, for example, skating, it would be very difficult for them to wear masks. But if you're on the bench or spectating or doing anything else, you have to wear a mask. We have to keep it safe. Also, locker room use is highly discouraged. We know that a lot of transmission can occur in the locker room. There's a lot of close contact. It's very difficult to keep it clean and disinfect. So we're strongly discouraging people from using the locker rooms, and just try to get changed as much as you can at home, and then as much as you can in the car or outside the facility, or just sitting on the bench. But please try to not to use the locker room. We are making sure that all facilities have to limit the spectators to two person per player. And then also for indoor facilities, they have to limit to the number of spectators to 50% of their capacity. So it cannot be a crowded spectator game. Also, people thinking, well, I'm vaccinated, I can do whatever I want. But actually, your vaccine status does not change anything having to do with these regulations. It still sticks regardless of your vaccination status. And then all the other New York State Department of Health interim guidance for sports and recreation have to be adhered to in Erie County. Then there's a question of travel with sports. And so we are saying is that travel outside of Western New York and the Finger Lakes region is strongly discouraged. You know, we want to minimize travel because we know that, outside our area, there can be high numbers of COVID, and so opportunities for lots of transmission. So we really want to keep the sports local and minimize the risk of transmission, especially bringing in from outside and outside areas and infection into our community. The current New York State travel advisory guidance applies to all athletes, coaches, and family members who choose to travel to all the non-contiguous states. So that travel advisory where if you travel for less than 24 hours, when you return, you don't have to quarantine. However, you need to get a test 4 days later. If you travel for more than 24 hours, you have to get a test 3 days before you return to New York State, and then quarantine when you come back. And then on the fourth day, you can get a test. And if when you have that, both of those test results are negative, then you can get out of quarantine. So we are adhering to those travel restrictions. And also vaccination does not alter that. Any team in Erie County's orange zones can travel within New York, Western New York and the Finger Lake regions. And then teams from other counties in the Western New York and Finger Lake regions can travel into Erie County. So again, we are allowing teams within Western New York and within the Finger Lakes to travel to play each other, but we're really strongly discouraging travel outside of those areas. So now changing the topic to vaccination, which is also a very hot topic. So just to remind our viewers that the federal government controls the vaccine supply to New York State, and then New York State controls the vaccine supply to Erie County. So we are not in control of the amount of vaccine that that we are able to administer. So far, Erie County Health Department has administered 16,520 first doses and 320 second doses in our pods since we started vaccinating on January 4th. So we have been working hard to get shots in arms as we are given a supply. So unfortunately, we've been told that we are only going to receive 1,700 doses again for this week. So because of the lack of supply, we're very frustrated. But again, we are going to have to cancel more of our clinics. So we are keeping all the clinics at ECC North and ECC South for Thursday. However, for Friday, we are only going to be able to keep the pod at ECC North, and we are going to have to cancel the pod at ECC South only. So again, Friday, ECC North vaccine clinic is still open. However, for Friday, the ECC South location is going to be canceled. Also, for Saturday, both the ECC North and the ECC South clinics have to be closed. We're not going to have enough vaccine to staff to be able to administer to people who have registered for those clinics. So, unfortunately, this is going to affect another 1,290 individuals who have made appointment for those clinics. However, I just want to reassure people that everybody who has made an appointment and it was canceled by us, we will be offering spots in future Erie County Health Department vaccine clinics when we do receive more vaccine from the state. So what we calculate at the current supply rate, it will probably take us a month to get through everybody who has made an appointment and we had to cancel, but we will get to you. If you're able to find another appointment to get a vaccine somewhere else, we encourage you to do that. We really want as many people in Erie County and Western New York to get vaccinated as possible, but please let us know when we call you to reschedule that you already have an appointment. We are scheduling second doses for all those that we have first doses scheduled for. So just to remind people about who we are able to vaccinate in Erie County. So the state has made very specific directions of who Erie County, who vaccinators in Erie County can vaccinate. So right now we are in Erie County only individuals who fall in the categories of phase 1A and phase 1B are allowed to get vaccinated, because those individuals are first most likely to be exposed because of their jobs, and then two, most likely to become very ill because of their age, and those are people over the age of 65 in the 1B category. So the way that the state wants us to divide and conquer with vaccination coverage in Erie County is that the state wants local health departments, so counties, to vaccinate people in 1B who fall in line as essential workers. And then pharmacies are tasked with vaccinating everybody who is 65 and up. So Erie County Health Department will no longer be permitted when we schedule new appointments for new doses that we haven't already canceled. We will not be able to schedule people who are not in those categories. That's what the rules are now. It may change in the future, but that's what we are allowed to do. And remember, appointments are required for all vaccines everywhere you go. So please make sure that you bring in proof of your vaccine appointments. If you are in isolation or quarantine because you are infected with COVID-19 or you have been exposed with COVID-19 in the past 10 days, we do not want you coming to any vaccine clinic because we do not want our vaccinators to be put at risk of COVID-19 exposure. Also, everybody who has been infected with COVID-19 in the past 90 days, you are already protected against COVID-19 with your own natural immunity. You have very strong protection already. So in a time where we have very limited vaccine supply, we're asking people who've been infected in the past 90 days to delay their vaccine appointment until it's been beyond 90 days, and then you might need some extra help for your immunity. But right now, you are protected, and with a small supply, we're asking you to step aside and let those who have no natural immunity to get vaccinated. Since appointments are required, we are asking everybody to bring your confirmation ticket, either printed out or on your phones that we can see. You have to provide us with proof that you actually fall in the 1B category of essential employees, so some proof of where you work and what you do, so we'll be able to get those shots in arms to essential workers. And remember, unfortunately, the supply of vaccine is very, very limited, so we will not be able to vaccinate the general public and open up appointments to the general public, other other than 1A or 1B or beyond until months from now, probably the summer. So I know that's very, very frustrating. We're frustrated too. However, there is a national shortage of vaccine supply, and we are doing the best that we can to work together to get shots in arms of people who are the most vulnerable, either to getting exposed or to becoming ill with COVID-19. So we've been receiving calls from various school districts and schools asking about, well, if school staff or teachers have been fully immunized, you know, is it okay if they travel outside of New York State or outside of the contiguous states for either the February break or for spring break? And we have to advise you that the Erie County Health Department has to follow New York State guidance on COVID-19. And right now, New York State does not exempt individuals from quarantine or from the New York State travel advisory based on their vaccination status. So if you know, you are a teacher or anybody that works in any essential job, if you're a health commissioner and you all of a sudden pop up with a tan, we will be very suspicious, and we do have people call us and contact us all the time to report people that they suspect travel has occurred. And you know, especially if you work in a place where you could have exposed other people, we will demand that you quarantine for and follow the New York State travel advisory. So vaccination status does not change your ability to travel outside of New York State or outside of the contiguous states. So just also want to remind people that once you are vaccinated, there's still many people in Erie County who have not been vaccinated, and we may have various strains in our community that we have to be worried about. So it's still very important that we continue to adhere to all the public health measures that we've been working on since March that have kept us safe and healthy. So that includes masks, social distancing, staying home when you're sick, avoiding any type of indoor in-person gatherings. And that also includes following the New York State travel advisory, and that people who travel outside of our area, outside of New York State, when they return, they have to quarantine and follow the guidelines for testing or staying quarantined for the entire 14 days. Vaccination status does not change that. And also, we've been hearing anecdotally, people who have been immunized, especially after one dose, they may develop COVID-19 symptoms, and you do not know if those symptoms are from the vaccine or from a new infection. And the only way you're going to know is if you get a test. So somebody who has received one dose or even two doses of COVID-19 vaccine, if you develop any type of COVID-19 symptoms, either quarantine yourself or isolate yourself for 10 days or get a diagnostic test 5 to 7 days, within the first week of symptoms, and so you can know your status. But again, still, at one dose of the vaccine is not fully protective, and it does take a few weeks to get full protection after the second dose. So I will turn it over to the county executive to entertain questions from the media. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. And I'd just like to note one more thing regarding the sports. One of the conversations we had with New York State was, and I had specifically with members of the governor's office, is it's in the hands of the local health departments, and if there are issues, you could shut down an entire league. So I want the teams and the coaches and the parents to understand that New York State's given an opportunity to play sports, but if we see numbers rising, if we see cases attributable to sports, we not only will require the shutdown of the teams, we could require the shutdown of the entire league. So it's in everyone's best interest to follow the rules, to do their best, because if we find out that there are those that are not following the rules, we can just shut it down. And the state has granted us the power to do it. We don't want to do it. We hope everyone will follow the rules properly, but if we find out that they're not, or that there's a number of cases that are emanating as a result of sports being played, and whether it's a youth hockey league, youth basketball league, high school, ECIC, anything, we do have the power to shut it down. So with that, we'll open up the questions, and we'll start at the top of my list here, which is WKBW-TV, Channel 7. Ed Dranch, I believe, is on. Ed. Do need to unmute yourself if you are muted.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Technology thing still is bewildering. Anyway, thanks for taking my question. Dr. Burstein, I want to talk vaccinations for a second, and you expressed some frustration this afternoon and have expressed frustration for many weeks now that Erie County isn't getting enough vaccine to even sustain itself for, you know, one or two clinics beyond that. The state, we understand, is shelving local county health department's plans for mass vaccination. How would Erie County's plan be any different from what the state is doing, A, and B, would it be more effective to have Erie County's plan and Erie County leading the way when it comes to mass vaccination? Would that be more effective in getting vaccine out quicker and being in control of how much you're getting, knowing how much you're getting, kind of that safety valve that the governor has so often referred to?
I'll take the question, Ed. I mean, first off, all counties are being treated the same. It's not just Erie County. So all counties in Western New York and across New York State have received less doses, and the percentages are basically the same. I know that because I've seen the numbers. We need all hands on deck. There's no doubt about it. We need to have county sites. We need to have state sites. We need to have pharmacies. We need to have doctor's offices, hospitals, community health centers, all providing the vaccine. There's really not much you can do when you're not receiving that much vaccine. It's as simple as that. I think it's important that all these sites get vaccine. It's just we need more of it. And that's why I was at least pleased when President Biden came out and said that their goal is to vaccinate 1.5 million people per day now and up the percentages. But it's all going to depend on the number of vaccines that New York State receives from the federal government. So I think
I need to follow up with that. Oh, go ahead.
No, I mean, you need to have as many sites possible to hit as many people. You can't just, like, the county has two sites that we're using right now, and we have a third identified and possibly could use another fourth, but we need more than four sites for the whole community to do it. We have the capability of doing mass vaccinations. For example, as I've noted, the one day a couple weeks ago, we did more than 1,700 doses in a day. We're only getting 1,700 doses for the whole week. So we have the capability to do more doses. We just need the doses.
So if I can follow up, in Chautauqua County, when I spoke with the local health official there was frustration expressed that the state isn't letting the counties really take control of this situation, and instead there are multiple tracks here, whereas they say that the county itself knows how to do mass vaccination. This is its job. Yet the state really isn't letting them adhere to those plans and has instead shelved those plans. So would it be more effective to have the county handle this, or is it beneficial to have the state handling it and the county just kind of playing as if it's a cog in the wheel here?
Everybody has to be involved. I can't speak on behalf of Chautauqua County. It's a smaller county and a much more rural county, so I know they have less pharmacies. I know Cattaraugus County a week or so ago got no vaccines, even though they requested them. So there were problems with the way that the ordering was done. Every county's different. You wouldn't want to put Erie County's plan in New York City, and you wouldn't put New York City's plan here. And the same thing with Chautauqua and Niagara. Every county has a different plan and has different needs. Because of the size of our county and how many people live in the metro region, we need to have as many sites up and running. We can't provide vaccine for the entire county. If all of a sudden we received 40,000 doses a week, which we hope to someday, but if all of a sudden it arrived tomorrow, we got 40,000 doses in Erie County for the whole week, we'd have to bring in more staff and so forth. So that's why it's important that you have these other sites that are available to do that. I wish we had more, because I know we could get more into arms of people. I think we can do it at a better percentage and efficiency than some of the other sites across our community, but we need all those sites up and running so we can get as many people in the long run as possible. Channel 4, I got to move on. WIVB-TV, Channel 4, George Rickert.
Hi, Mark. Have you heard at all what the governor may be announcing tomorrow? And if it is related to cluster zone designation, Do you think it's realistic at this point that cluster zones could now be eliminated or downgraded in some way?
I have had conversations with the governor. I should say communications. We haven't talked directly. We have been texting and other forms. But and I've been talking to his staff. And I know he's going to make an announcement tomorrow. I'm not at liberty to say exactly what it is. I think it is fair to say I've been pushing for some time to move us out of the orange cluster zone. They are going to be making an announcement tomorrow, not just about Erie County, but I believe as it applies to other areas of the state. Channel 2, WGRZ-TV, I think Dave McKinley's on. David?
Abe?
Hi, David.
Hello. Abe. Just to follow up on George's question, because it's along the lines of what I asked him, five simple words. I'll have more on this tomorrow. The governor did seem to provide what would be taken by a lot of people as hopeful that this could be some good news. And you've mentioned, and we've talked before about your tireless efforts really to reason with the state and to compare numbers. Are you excited about what he might have to say tomorrow? Is this going to be good news for us?
I will not note excitement or, whoop, let me lower you. For myself, it is not at this point of dealing with the pandemic for nearly a year now. It's not so much excitement. It's just I want to move through this as best as we can. And so when it comes to dealing with issues in government, I know you don't want to get too high and you also don't want to get too low. You try to keep an even keel, keep it steady. And I believe the governor will be making a good announcement for this community and others in New York State tomorrow. We deserve it. But we'll just have to wait and see. And when it comes to excitement levels, I don't think anything could have matched the excitement levels we had for the Buffalo Bills in the AFC Championship until the game we realized was out of hand. But I'd rather have the excitement level on the field with regards to the Bills or the Sabres because I realized so far in government, through my years in government, that you want to keep it even. You don't want to get too high, too low. You don't want to have expectations too high, because there's always something new that materializes that you least expected. So Spectrum News.
Hey, Mark, thanks. So you back on vaccines. Obviously, you've already said Dr. Burstein, or anyone in your account is really happy with the amount of vaccines you've been given. And you said in one day you were able to do maybe 1,700 vaccines. How many vaccines do you think Erie County could do in a day if they pretty much had as many vaccines as they needed? And if things don't go that way and you keep getting the amount of vaccines you seem to be getting each week, how long do you think will be until Erie County can catch up on all the appointments they've had canceled?
Well, if we had all three of our pods open and full appointments, we easily could do more than 2,000 vaccines a day. We know that. Probably somewhere around 21 to 2,200 vaccines, at least. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen anytime soon unless there's a mass drop of new supply coming from Moderna and Pfizer. We are starting to see the state is receiving not only the first doses but second doses, so we'll be able to meet the demand for the individuals who already had a first dose. And we are going to have to, of course, schedule those clinics, because you have to have first doses going at the same time as second doses, and you got to give the second doses to folks. So we know we could do about 2,000 people per day. We also understand that we have to meet both a first dose and second dose clinic, and so we're going to be spending a lot of time in the next few weeks probably addressing the individuals who are going to get second doses. And also in February, catching up with those that we unfortunately had to cancel. And if we receive doses at the current rate we are, it's going to take us a month to meet that the demand, so to speak, for the canceled appointments. Nevertheless, the demand that exists out there otherwise. It's in all hands on deck. We're all going to play a role in this, but it's going to take time. It's not moving as fast as any of us wants. I mean, as you noted, none of us are happy about this. But it's out of our hands, it's out of our control. And hopefully we'll be getting more in the future. so that we can get not only the people who received the first dose, the second dose, but then we can move on to also do the other individuals who haven't even gotten the first dose yet. The Buffalo News, Sandra Tan.
Yes, thanks. Regarding the likelihood that state restrictions will be rolled back tomorrow, isn't this all coming a little late when you consider the fact that there has been this fundamental unfairness that businesses and, you know, sports leagues have been pushing, and the fact that judges seem to be agreeing with them? There's just been a series of lawsuits now in which judges have sided with businesses and sports leagues in regard to restrictions that seem to be, from their point of view, arbitrary and capricious. And so I'm wondering, especially in light of your own thoughts, expressed thoughts about the fundamental unfairness of the Orange Zone lasting as long as it has, what you make of the fact that judges have already overturned many of the tightest restrictions that have been imposed by the governor in the Orange Zone.
Well, the one thing I will note is there's no agreement even among judges. The most recent decision was issued by Judge Ward rejecting efforts by salon owners and barbershops to reduce the number of tests that they had to do. So it's not unanimity with judges. And I'm fairly confident that when some of these cases go up to the Fourth Department, the big victories they had are going to get reversed. And I feel very confident when they go to the Court of Appeals, the big victories they had are going to get reversed, because the Court of Appeals has already said the state can do this. And you got to remember, when you get judges, they're only looking at the small item in front of them. They're not looking necessarily at the big picture either. So I think it's important to understand that what the mechanisms, the protocols that were put in place are put in place to prevent the further spread of coronavirus, which will reduce hospitalizations and inevitably reduce deaths. I just showed the mortality data that showed more people died in the last 4 months than in the first 6 months. What's happened in the last 4 months? We've been open more. And I guarantee you, with more people being out and more opportunity for people to transmit the disease, they're going to catch it, which means we're going to continue to see hospitalizations and deaths. And I have run into people who thought that the coronavirus was a joke, was a hoax. They didn't know anybody who had it. And either they caught it themselves and were very ill, or have lost a loved one as a result of COVID-19, because they went about their business. They were partying at friend's house and then they got sick, or their family member got sick and died. So I think people need to understand that this is real. The protocols that were put in place were there to protect individuals. As we noted with the youth sports and adult sports leagues too, it's not just youth, it's also adult sports leagues. If we find out that adult sports leagues are not following the rules, we're going to shut down those adult sports leagues. I was a hockey coach for a long time, and I want to see people on the ice, I want to see them playing, but if we find out that they're violating the rules and we have spread, we're going to shut it down, because the goal is to protect as many people, prevent as many people from getting the coronavirus until we can vaccinate everyone. It's as simple as that. And for those who won't get the vaccine, who say, I'm not going to get the vaccine, that is your personal choice. But I'm telling you right now, I guarantee you there are individuals in our community who are going to refuse to get the vaccine, who are going to get sick and are going to die from the coronavirus because they didn't get the vaccine. I can't force them to put the vaccine in their arm. I can just ask them to do it, because it's not a joke. It's not a hoax. It's real. And 1,445 of our fellow Erie County residents have died from the COVID-19. WBFO, Mike Desmond. Michael, do you have a question? If not, we'll move on to WBFO.
There we go. Trouble on muting. The state's been vaccinating using its own resources and drugstores and so forth. Patients and staff in nursing home, is there any chance that as that winds down, hopefully, that you'll see more shots being put into the general category of the 1As and 1Bs, or is it not enough doses to make a difference?
I'm not certain. I think it would make a difference every time we get a new dose in someone's arm, but I don't know the actual numbers that the state has. So I really can't answer that question. You'd really have to ask the state, because I don't think myself nor Dr. Burstein know exactly what the state is using for nurses who are doing the vaccinations in nursing homes. and at their site? I really don't know that. So I think that question is probably best directed to the state. WBEN, Brendan Keeney.
Hey, Mark. Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul said that it's probably better to not be scheduling out appointments far in advance because of uncertain supply. There's a lot of frustration, as she mentioned. How should residents go about scheduling at this point?
That's a good question. I don't know. We were ordered by the state to schedule out into the future. We did through the remainder of the month, and then the state cut back on our numbers, and we had to cancel those appointments. We will reschedule the individuals who had canceled appointments and get those first once we get the new doses in, and that could take us a month. Anybody who's over the age of 65 has been directed to go to a pharmacy. I do know that as of last week, there were 3,900 doses that went to pharmacies in Erie County, 100 to basically 39 pharmacies. And it ran from the big box stores like Rite Aid to small mom and pop pharmacies where they may only have one building as compared to multiple locations. Right now, I believe there are no vaccines that are being provided by CVS or Walgreens to seniors because CVS and Walgreens are involved in the vaccination of nursing homes. I don't know what is the best way to get vaccinated at this point. I can't give that answer. I have a lot of people say, what's the best way? You must know it, and I really don't. The county is not scheduling at this point for the future. We are going to reschedule vaccinations for those that were canceled. Those people will be individually contacted. Once we get through those, then we'll be able to reopen it up to the general universe. But even then, we've been told that we're limited on who we can do. If you're a senior, you're supposed to go through pharmacies. They don't want us scheduling new appointments for seniors. They don't want us scheduling anything other than for essential government or workers at this point. And because we don't have vaccines, there's no reason to schedule those appointments until we get them. I really wish I had a better answer, but I don't. The state is controlling a lot of this. Let's put it this way, it is all out of our hands until we actually get a vaccine dose. Then we can put it in somebody's arm. But until that point, where maybe there's direct delivery of vaccines to Erie County from the federal government, which we hope would eventually happen, and we have the storage capability of doing that, it's kind of out of our hands. And so I know people are unhappy, justifiably so. They're confused, justifiably so. But it is a system that is not what we want, and hopefully it'll get better in the future. We'll go back up to the top. All right, first off, is there anybody else on that from another media outlet? Hearing none, we'll go back up to WKBW-TV. Do one more round each. Any other questions?
Thanks, Mark. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a two-parter here. So I guess number one in this question is, how did the state determine the number of vaccines that were allocated to Western New York in this latest round? And then number two, how does or what strategies have been implemented to ensure access to this vaccine in disadvantaged populations?
The first one, it's all done by population percentages. They get a certain amount for the state. Let's say first doses, and they determine what the population is and break it up then. And then they split it up based on the pharmacies, the federally qualified health centers, the hospitals, the local health departments, the state sites. We're not in control of the actual allocation. We just get it. As I said, we know we could do more, but we at this point have not received it. On the second one, I know the state is doing pop-up clinics across the region. Our goal was to we have a site right now, because we had to cancel it, but we have sites going at ECC North and ECC South. Our goal would be to open up a third site, which would be at the convention center, which would be the large one. There's no reason to open up the convention center, so because we don't have the vaccine. We also have a mobile unit that was going to be used to drive and vaccinate in areas of concern, which not only include areas in the city of Buffalo, but also in our rural communities. Like, we wanted to drive our new mobile unit for the Department of Health which has two examination rooms in it, to the rural portions, as well as the inner city of Buffalo, in which we could have a pop-up clinic utilizing our mobile unit. So we have plans to do that. But right now, until we get the vaccines, there's really not a whole lot we can do.
And Mark, could you just kind of elaborate on that? How many vaccinations, or how many people would be vaccinated, or could you vaccinate on a given day or week in either of those two clinics, one with the convention center and two with the mobile clinic?
They're totally different numbers. The mobile clinic is much smaller. I mean, we're talking about a couple hundred per day. The convention center could be thousands per day. But right now, there really isn't anything that can be done because we just don't have the vaccines. So we are continuing to meet the appointments for those limited times that we announced at ECC North and ECC South. And then all of those that were canceled will be notified when we have vaccines to start scheduling them and tell them where their vaccine's going to be. It's not going to be you get to pick your time and date. We're going to offer you a time and date, and you're going to have to show, because we've got to make this up somehow, and we're not going to be able to give people just the time and say, I want to do it at 6:55 at night. We're really limited in how we can do this going forward. But we are going to give everyone an opportunity to get that vaccine that was canceled. And then as we go forward, I assume we're going to be getting more doses on a weekly basis. I just don't know when. And when that's the point, our goal is to have three point of distribution clinics operating, as well as mobile unit. But when that happens is anyone's guess. WIVB-TV, George Rickert. Any more questions, George?
Mark, the two Bills games, the governor allowed the two Bills games to have fans in the stands, sort of what he described as a pilot program to see how it goes and maybe it could be applied somewhere else. Have you heard anything about where that might first be applied, that whatever was learned from the Bills games, what could it be carried over to?
I have not. The only thing I was told at the time is it potentially could be used for other sporting events or mass gatherings, and I think the governor hinted at Broadway at one point, but there's been no further discussion since then about utilizing that system, which I think I need to remind everybody was paid for by the ticket holders and the Bills. It was not paid for by the state. So the ticket holders actually paid a portion of that price, and the Bills paid a portion of the price. So it's not like the state is going to set up these clinics to open up these other games. So if people are wondering, well, what about Sabres games? I've heard nothing about Sabres games. And even if they did, and utilizing the system that the Bills did, you'd have to end up paying for the cost of the test yourself. The state's not going to cover the cost associated with that. Channel 2?
Okay.
Dave McKinley, any more questions?
Abe? Yes, as you worked through this closely, I was sitting here trying to think about, you know, what kind of restrictions or businesses might have restrictions lifted, because it's been so long. The governor is saying we need to open the economy. So I guess my question mark is as you look at this, what areas of the economy might you expect to be open, or where restrictions might be eased next?
Well, if let's assume they go from the orange to the yellow, there's a lawsuit that allowed for a preliminary injunction for restaurants to be in the yellow, but technically we're still in the orange. So if the lawsuit is overturned at the appellate court, then all those restaurants would have to close indoor dining again. Except if we're in the yellow, then they have the right to have indoor dining at four people per table. There are some differences between the yellow and orange, and then of course there's more differences between the yellow and no color-coded zone. It's not a huge difference from where we are today, as what's happening today, in fact, compared to what the rules are. So if we went to yellow, it would answer a lot of questions with regards to what happens if the court case that was issued by Judge Nowak was overturned at the appellate court. If it was, then all those indoor dining has to shut down as long as we're still in the orange zone. So I think that's the big one that would be affected if the governor just said, okay, you're going back to the yellow. It's as simple as that. I'm still very concerned about what could happen, knowing that this variant that is much more transmissible is probably here. And if it starts seeing lots of cases associated with the variant and we have everything opened again, what that means. That's why it's important and incumbent upon everybody to still wear a mask, still follow the rules, avoid the social gatherings as much as possible. Because things are opening doesn't mean that it's all 100% better, because it's not. And I will note, there were some folks who were saying, oh, we must have herd immunity now. There's no way we have herd immunity now. We don't have enough people who caught COVID-19, nor have received the vaccine to get herd immunity. There's more people who are protected, especially in nursing homes. That's a good thing. But we are nowhere near herd immunity, so we're still going to be dealing with this for many months. Spectrum News, any more questions?
Yeah, Mark. So we've already talked about the fact that there is a limited amount of vaccines available. When it comes to supplies like PPE or bandages, when it comes to actually giving the vaccine, is Erie County behind there as well, or are they well stocked for that?
We are well stocked with PPE. We have more than sufficient supply for PPE, because we were not only building PPE supplies for ourselves, but for ensuring protection at other locations as needed. We have a very ample supply of PPE, and it's one of the reasons why recently we gave some of our PPE out to local governments as well as to legislators to share in their communities. We have ample supply of gloves, of masks, of gowns, of face shields, of bandages, of testing material for COVID. We are in good supply. Sandra, any more questions?
Yes, just in regard to tomorrow's announcement, to what extent do you think pressure that's been put to bear by folks who have sued for greater reopening, as well as your own comments about fundamental fairness to this region, to what extent do you think all of these things have had on the governor taking another look at where we are and reevaluating Erie County's position as far as being able to reopen?
If anything, I probably think the lawsuits have had a detrimental effect. It's probably hardened their resolve. I do believe that the fairness argument is the best argument, and it's one that they're the most responsive to. Just complaining that I'm not open and you're hurting my business is not actually going to be well received by the state. I know that as a fact. The issue associated with fairness is a different one. I've had multiple representatives of the governor's staff say, yeah, we understand your point of view. It's a logical and it's an important point of view that we have to treat our residents across New York State fairly. So it's part of the argument that was made to the governor and the New York State Health Department. But
the reason there is not much difference between the yellow zone and orange zone restrictions right now is because many of those suits have been successful.
Yeah, but some of them haven't. And I find it interesting that the ones that were successful have been mentioned by the media, but the ones that haven't were not. It's kind of interesting. I don't think the attorneys that pushed those suits are very thrilled that they got a negative result. And that just goes to show that there's competing views on this. There's competing views. I mean, it depends on sometimes what judge you get, politics-wise. Because as much as state Supreme Court judges are judges, they're all political beasts, and they all want to get reelected, and sometimes you have to look and say, what's their political party? When are they up for reelection? As somebody who runs in politics, and judges will say, no, not me, except for the 14 months before they have to run, and then they're out there raising money and doing all kinds of things. So you got to look at all aspects associated with a decision in this area. And I know the judges probably aren't happy with me saying that, but as someone, they often come to get their support when they run for re-election or election. I know that to be the case. So there's all kinds of factors that go into decisions as to why something is done. I think it's fair to say that the number one reason why all these protocols were put in place was to protect and save lives. I hope everyone agrees with that. I know not everyone does. They think it's all retribution, it's all about power. It's not. Why would we want to shut down things that generate revenue for the county? Why? There's no reason why I want to shut down anything that generates revenue for the county.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.